Hi, everybody, and thank you for joining us for the Preceptor Podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Ryan, and today we have with us a P4 student on APPE Rotations, Lauren Beaumont. Lauren, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, yeah, I'm Lauren Beaumont. Like Dr. Aide said, I am a P4 student in my third APPE rotation at the moment. I'm currently on an infectious disease rotation, but had my institutional previously, where I got to see quite a few different disease states. I'm planning on either pursuing a residency or a fellowship. I'm still really open and unsure, so excited to see how the rest of my APPE rotations go to try to guide me along to whichever path I'm wanting to take.
That's fabulous, and I know that I changed my mind about 7 times during APPEs about what I wanted to do when I graduate, and then after I graduated, changed my mind about 7 more times, so.
Yeah, I've changed it a couple times per rotation so far, and I'm only on the third, so.
it's pretty normal.
Yeah.
Well, we asked Lauren to be with us today to talk about some new ADA guidelines that recently came out, and I will be the first to tell you that diabetes is probably one of my weakest subjects. I joke with people that unless it's regular insulin or a sulfonylurea or metformin, I don't know a lot about it. Lantus is like my really cool new fancy thing for diabetes, so not really the best, but Lauren's going to tell us all about these new guidelines. So just to start us off, when were these new ADA guidelines released?
So they released the full new 2022 guideline update in January, but they've made a couple of revisions that they released in May, right before the ADA conference this year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, and that's interesting because they generally update these every year around January, but to do a mid-year update is a pretty rare thing. I think I haven't seen that happen that I can recall of. So that's pretty interesting. Can you tell us what kind of prompted the change, or what's changed between the new and the old guidelines?
When I started looking into it, I realized it seems like quite a bit. There have been quite a bit of updates, it looks like, from even screening recommendations to initial therapy choices, management of complications. So I'll go into just a little bit of a surface level, but there were quite a few changes made. First that I noticed was the screening recommendation changed from all adults 45 and over to adults 35 and over, per a recommendation from the U.S. Preventative Task Force, but it was updated in the ADA guidelines as well. And then the one that really stuck out to me was this change in initial therapy recommendation. So, I mean, I know personally, since I've learned anything about type 2 diabetes, it is diagnosis, metformin. They're synonymous. The two have always been synonymous in my brain, so this is something that I really found interesting. The new guidelines now utilize the term individualized approach instead of recommending metformin to all patients. So upon the initial diagnosis, they allow or recommend now for providers to take into account the goal for specific patients to prevent complications of diabetes and take into account things like cost, access to care, and individualized management needs. So they do say that the first line option will still probably be metformin in most cases, but they do allow some flexibility now compared to the previous guidelines.
All right, so you're talking about individualized approaches. Not everybody's going to get metformin at the beginning, although it still might be appropriate for most people. Anything else that's new and different that we should know about?
Yeah, they really focused on this comprehensive approach to complication management, too. So they've adopted this 4-pillar approach to the management of complications, where the 4 pillars are glycemic management, blood pressure management, lipid management, and then the utilization of agents with cardiovascular and kidney benefit, obviously still on top of, you know, lifestyle modification and diabetes education. But they've adopted this comprehensive approach where they're focusing on preventative measures early on in therapy. So going along with some of these pillars, they have made some adjustments under each one as well. So in terms of the agents with renal benefit, they've now recognized finerenone as a recommended agent for diabetic patients with advanced CKD if they cannot tolerate SGLT2 inhibitors. The SGLT2 inhibitors are still going to be the first line option, but in patients who may not tolerate or are unable to take these, they are now suggesting finerenone as a secondary option just to have some renal benefit present for the patient. On top of that, they have also added in a recommendation suggesting that a combination of SGLT2 inhibitors and a GLP-1 receptor agonist may be beneficial for patients with heart or kidney disease. It looks like there's some emerging evidence that these drugs can have an additive prevention effect when used together, which is new.
Now I feel out of touch. So I've not heard of finerenone before. Can you tell me how it works? Do you know anything about that? I was very proud of myself for knowing SGLT2.
Or even like a brand name? Right? Is it something I've seen in a commercial?
The brand name is Kerendia, and I think it is recently approved.
This is probably not a medication that many, if very few people are on at this point. So this is a big boon for this medication to show up in a guideline like this. That's pretty exciting for them. So why were these changes made? Were they made based on some new studies that came out? Were they made based on, you know, like one really big study? Any ideas about why these changes were made at this point?
Yeah, it looks like it's kind of a compilation of evidence from multiple trials coming together to emphasize this idea of individualizing approaches and creating a comprehensive approach. Those are really the two main themes that it seems like have been emphasized in all of these updates. So now that we have some really solid evidence from the SGLT2 inhibitors and GLP-1 agonists in lowering the risk and progression of cardiovascular and renal disease, these guidelines have really just opened up the playing field to allow some flexibility for patients who may benefit from these earlier on.
Probably has something to do as well with some of these, the movement of some of these drugs from being brand name only drugs to being generic and being more cost effective. I know metformin was always nice because it was super cheap and we could get it for patients, but you know, if you look at like a Januvia, that was very expensive, but now that we have generics about those, it does increase our ability to give them to more patients and not have the cost be the barrier to that.
Yeah, I think so, and especially with the SGLT2s coming off of brand name patents, I think we're seeing more competition in that market as well. I'm no pharmacy economist, but that would play a role, I would guess.
Yeah, I think too, just seeing these agents have benefits in multiple different therapeutic areas, they are filling a lot of buckets with one or two medications compared to having multiple drugs for each disease state. Especially like Wegovy being such a big player in the obesity realm right now, and the addition of the dual agonist GLP-1, GIP, tirzepatide option now, that is going to kind of add some competition to the playing field there. So expanding the access to these as newer agents move in.
I mean, decreased pill burden is a big deal for these patients, so
yes,
I definitely can see that being a reason as well.
Absolutely. So I've learned a couple of new names for medications today, so thank you for that. How do you think this is going to change practice for pharmacists going forward?
I think this is a great opportunity for pharmacists to really advocate for their patients in a number of settings. So from your ambulatory care pharmacists who are helping create the initial treatment plan and working with patients along the way, to community pharmacists who may be making recommendations for patients who they notice are failing therapies or are having a hard time finding a therapy that really sticks or benefits them. This multifactorial approach that they're suggesting now is really a good opportunity for pharmacists to step in and share their updated knowledge, because they are, you know, the drug experts and are going to, you know, be a good resource for people since they are keeping up with these guidelines and learning all of these new therapeutic regimens along the way.
It sounds like I just need to purge all my sulfonylurea knowledge.
Yes.
And learn some new classes.
Yeah. It's happened quickly.
Yeah. Make room for finerenone, which I can tell you is a selective non-steroidal mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist.
Are you sure you can tell us?
I can't tell you anything else, but I can tell you that. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for taking some time to educate us. I know I've learned a lot, and I know I have some homework to do now. So thank you very much for sharing on this new update.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you guys for having me.
And thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Pharmacy Preceptor Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please like or subscribe. We would love your feedback on topics that interest you and how we can make this podcast better. Please submit your comments to help us develop content that best serves you. Thanks, everyone.